Accession number 23200, Real 8.
Mr. Kidjo, Real 8. What about the first aid side of things that you mentioned? What training did you get in first aid then? How far did you go?
Well, we were taught how to treat burns, you know, anybody got a burn over like that, you know.
And how did you
Anybody's got skull, you know. Well, we were taught how to put a gauze on them, you know, a dry gauze, you know, not to put any sort of grease or ointment or anything like that line, but to keep it, you know, and keep the person who was burnt, as I said, keep them quiet and keep them warm. Well, things that we were taught to do, you know what I mean, it's wrong today, but then and then, you know what I mean, you were taught, you know what I mean, if you were told to do something, you know, how to treat first aid, you just took it for granted. They knew more than what you knew, and they were right, you were wrong, but do it, you know. But I would say, if anybody was hit or got shrapnel or anything in that line, I think we just would have to, was told what if a person was hit and blood stream, how to stem the blood, you know. You know, the biggest thing you can get a hold of, especially your towel, stem it, you know, till you get assistance, you know, until somebody comes. But you weren't taught how to treat anybody regards that. Because the thing is, you know what I mean, you were taught a basic first aid, but you weren't taught how to treat them. And what was there and what was you could use, you know.
Now, so these convoys, the Mediterranean, you were sort of 7 days out, 2 days in Naples, 7 days back. What do you remember of them? Or are they just routine for you?
Well, what used to happen, when we were going there, when they were taking the convoy in, but when he came back, he used to lie off different places in the city, you know. And he used to get a lot of these, from Algiers and places like that. He used to come along on the little boats, you know. We used to call them wogs, you know. Well, what he used to do, he used to come along and he used to fetch big stalks of bananas, stuff like that, you know. And of course, all they wanted was cigarettes, baccy. Because if they got cigarettes and baccy, they could get stuck, you know, which they couldn't batter with. They couldn't batter with the big stalks of bananas, fruit, and stuff like that in their country because there was that much of it. But what was very little of was cigarettes and baccy. They could get anything. Or clothes, that was another thing. And of course, what we used to do for a tin of cigarette tobacco, you know, which was 8 ounces. You would get a big stalk of bananas, you know. Well, we used to pull them out because they had like these little skull boats, you know. We used to pull it aboard, but you can imagine, you know, big stalk of bananas, you know, got it down below. You wonder where you're going to hang it, you know. We used to hoist it up in what it called in the mess deck, you know, and long where your bunks were. And when it started raining, the lads would shout out ourselves, you know. Of course, if you're on the top bunk, you're lucky, you know. You've got more than what the bloke in the bottom did. The bloke in the bottom got mostly skin, you know, because what was thrown at him, you know. But the lads used to, you know what I mean, what he used to do, is to think, you know, 8 ounces of baccy, it's a lot for fruit they can throw away, because they get that much. So some of them got wise to it, and what he used to do, used to open the tin of the baccy, strip it of the baccy, and we used to use what you call a lot of cotton waste on board a ship, especially the stokers. So what we used to do was pack the tin, take the baccy out, pack the tin with cotton waste, and we used to seal it, which is what I call, we used to get the seal it with solar, the lid, and it's not, you know. No, they didn't know, the wogs didn't know it was coming in. But what used to happen, they got a tin of, what do you call it, cotton waste. Because they, when they got ashore, they would have to cut that, they would have cut the stole that off for to get to it, you know. And the lads were, but all sorts of tricks for to get stuff in that one. And that's how we got a load of fruit. We got a table load of fruit by, what do you call it, by making stuff. You know what I mean? Forging, you know. Robbing the, what do you call it, if we used to call them wogs, robbing the wogs, I have a photograph there, in there, of the, you know, alongside this shit. And this is what we used to do. And they used to bring a lot of stuff home, you know. I used to bring bananas home and stuff, you know. You know, because bananas were hard to get in England, you know. But you can imagine, you can imagine what I call it, you know what I mean, the amount of stuff you could get in fruit. But the trouble was, you didn't know exactly when you would be home. And bananas was such a thing, they went black easy, right too fast, you know. If you could get in Gibraltar, if you could afford it, and if you had a spare suitcase, you could fill up, what I call it, a suitcase full of fruit and send it off. And with a matter of 2 or 3 days, your parents at home would see that. But it meant buying a suitcase. Well, as I say, anything else, you got 7 bob a week. I mean, it takes a lot of money for to buy a suitcase, you know. And then you had to pay for your baggage. But I found out that if you got fruit and stuff like that, you could send it from Gibraltar. It went faster from there than what it would with us, because we were more concentrating on convoys. We didn't know how long would it be, when you were going to get back, you know. So it was better, easier to send it by Gibraltar. But as I say, people used to, what I call, you know, used to see, and I mean, it's a luxury, you know, fruit was a luxury, you know, I mean, to people in this country. Why don't they bring it home, you know? We used to say to you, we give the money to get you the, what I call, a buyer case, send it. Well, you couldn't tell, it's not like going out and going the next day to go in a shop. It may be weeks before you're in Gibraltar. So in other words, as you know, they've got the money, they won't make the money at home. We aren't the money at sea. So they would probably say, well, if you can get this, we'll give you the money. But it didn't say you're going to get the money or the next day. It may be a week, maybe a fortnight, maybe a month, maybe 2 months, you know. And when you get there, it didn't say you're going to get there to get it. Because you may only be in it a short time. But there's a lot of things you could get when you were at the med, you know. And you could bring a woman in the set, you know.
What about Naples was where you usually went, wasn't it? Did you get ashore in Naples? What do you remember of that?
We used to do what called Malta used to be most important. Malta. I thought we spent a lot more time in Malta than what we did in Naples.
What do you remember? Did you get ashore in Malta?
Yes, I got a lot of ashore in Malta. we used to like the lads. You see, Malta was a place, it used to play what you call the bingo, you know. I forgot the name of the time, you know. But a lot of us played in Malta, bingo. A lot of us played in Naples, but mostly in Malta. And they had big houses and stuff, you know. And the lads used to love to get a show, to play, what I call it, bingo. Because, you know, I mean, the money was there. If you could make it, you know, it was worth, you know. In other words, is some of the lads used to had what you call a syndicate, you know. In other words, shed. Whatever you would, you shed. It was like a pool. Some did win some good money, you know, but not a lot. But what I call the top prizes were great in the city there. And Malta was known for it, you know. And that's where bingo, to me, was the first time I ever heard of it. Before I ever come to this country, you know. Because Maltese, they loved gambling, you know, especially bingo.
And what else would you do ashore? I mean, did you go drinking much?
Well, the beer wasn't all that much good, man. And as I, you mean, Your money didn't. You see, your money. You mean $7? You know, I know beer was cheap, but for all it was worth, you know, I mean cheap. It didn't taste. So you know, times you know, you say to yourself, why waste your money on beer? You know, stuff that one. You know, I know it's some places used to get a drink in the city that was canny stuff. You know, it was their own home brew. But some of the beer was imported in, it was sour, you know, but you wouldn't touch it. You wouldn't waste your money on it, you know. You hadn't what you call a great lot of money to spend, you know. I mean, there's lots of bullshit. I mean, when you were at sea, you know, you used to buy your luxuries. And what you had left, you know, I mean, you used to try and save. And what you tried and save, you know, you used to try and keep, you know, for when you went to shore, you know. Going home and leave in the city. Things, you know, I mean, I used to buy things. I bought a lot of stuff, souvenirs, you know, I mean, for home, you know, brought home my mother. I've got Elizabeth's got a cloth I bought, what I call a tablecloth, a silk one, you know. I brought it home for my mother, and my mother passed it on to Elizabeth. She has it, you know. What state is it now? I don't know. She never used it. My mother never used it, you know. But things like that, about different things, souvenirs in the city, you know. I brought them home for my mother at the time, you know, and my family, you know. Different ones in the city there. Where they got to, where the thing was, you know, I don't know. Little things like that, you know, you brought home.
How did you get on with the Maltese and the Naples people?
Well, the Maltese, you got on well with the Maltese people because they're more like yourself, you know. They were the ones that would have taken the flat the same as us. In Naples, the eye ties were just the opposite because they didn't believe in getting defeated, you know. They didn't want to, you know, they were going to be defeated, you know, because they were an enemy of the Germans. In other words, they didn't want to know you, you know. They didn't want you in the country. But the end of the day is, what they wanted was the luxury of going back again, cigarettes, stuff like that. You see, I found out during the war, the matter was in this country, well, mostly abroad, cigarettes seemed to be, it was worth its weight in gold. People could get stuff. The people you used to battle with, was forced, the first thing they would say, cigarettes or butty. Because they could get luxuries such as butter and stuff like that in the black market with cigarettes. But they couldn't get it with money. Money was no good, had no value. But cigarettes had. Now, they could get meat, they could get any damn thing they like with cigarettes. But they must need them cigarettes. With being in the Navy and being cigarettes being cheap, it was a barter you could do with any country you were in. It was marvellous what you could get. It was like gold, you know, I mean, you could turn around and nominate the person that, if you want to see somebody you liked it, and they said so many pack of cigarettes, you say no. You could guarantee before you left you'll get it at half the price what you asked for, and that was cigarettes. Cigarettes seem to have a bigger in the black market in all these countries, no matter what, in Africa, what I call it, Malta, or if it was in Naples and places like that. People still, what I call it, you know, they thrived on it. They could get anything, you know. In later years, I found out when I would come to Germany, you know, cigarettes played a big part.
Do you remember they had a regatta?
That was outside Naples.
Yeah, do you remember that at all?
Yes, because I'll tell you why. Because we all seem to come last. I think the tables, I have what I call it in the house somewhere, where the tables in, you know. I don't think we ever finished up in the first three. We all seem to be the last three, last.
Were you in any of the races? Or
I was in one. I did a one and one, you know, but if I remember rightly, I think we came second last. I was in the road. another bit there.
Did you train for it?
Well, when you went to Woodacourt, you see, on your seamanship, when you first went in, you did Woodacourt, you know what I mean, training on these different types of boats, you know, and rowing what they're doing, what not to do, you know. If you've got a boat crew, and there's so many in the boat crew, and you were training, you know, and you're doing it regular, you would know one another's habits. But if you'd done it when you were on the sea and then forget about it, and you never did it no more for months on ends, and you went back on that boat, you would lose what your rhythm, what the other boat crew, you know, you made sad, you know. Because, you see, I found out some some ships and some of the lads that worked on that was on the ships in here, even if we were in harbour, used to go out and get the boat out. You know what I mean? They used to do all the time. They loved doing things like that. They loved sailing because it was a hobby. Well, I lived on the south coast mostly, which they used to do. I found out anybody who lived down there thought more about boats, sailing and stuff like that, and more what it did in the north, you know. And I found out when, if it were the first chance I got, it was like going playing football. Now to me, being a Geordie and up here, we were like to play football. But down the south, it was mostly sailing. So I found out where these people, you know, down at the quarter, that like sailing and like Woodacourt, they automatically went out as a sport to them. Now when it came back to Regretta, we were talking about Naples, that's how we lost. Because majority of us were Geordie, Scotsman is the good one, and that's how we always lost. But I wouldn't say it if it had been come to football. On sailing, Regretta, I can't remember anything. I can only remember once when we came fourth, you know, near the 4-3.
Now, what would happen when you got back to Pollock Dock? Would you get ashore? What was it like in Dock, Pollock Dock?
Well, when you came back to Pollock Dock, it's a case of the... It was what we call boiler cleaning. Now, it depends on what boiler cleaning you had to do, and depends on what refit you had to do. Now, we got the... When you got back, it depended on what part of the ship you were on, port or starboard. So, in other words is, if you're going to be in, what I call, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, whichever it was, you automatically, your leave was split up. Now, you'd probably be lucky, you know. Port one would probably get 2 weeks' leave. Starboard one would probably get 2 weeks' leave. But if you port two or starboard two, it didn't say you're going to get it because your ship would be probably be seaworthy by the time you came back and you had to go. But the next time you came in for boiler clean, you were forced on the list. I mean, everybody got a turn, you know. Now, but it depends on how long you're going to be in. Sometimes two-thirds of ship's company would get away on leave. Other times it didn't, you know.
Now, what would you do when you went ashore on leave?
I talk about a foreign country, I talk about home.
At home?
Well, if I came home and I went on leave that one, you know, we used to go to dances.
So you come back?
Yes.
To Newcastle, to
well,
Heaven.
I was telling lies there because I was caught in the last over in Ireland, you know. And I knew that from the time I went to Ireland, you know, to the time that would decommission the ship. It depend on me to leave. If I got 14 days leave, I should go home for 7. And they should spend the other 7 days, you know. Because their family, you know, I mean, they had a big house, you know, that 7 rooms, you know, it was like a 3-story house, that one, you know, in Belfast. And they used to say, you know, why, what it called, stop in, because what we used to do, put into the, what it called, the Siemens, you know, the YMCA, or I think it was, if I remember right, I think it was the Navy house, the Navy, what it called, was the best between the two. You could go there, you know, but their family used to tell and say, well, you can come here and stop here for the 7 days, you know. But fair enough, that one, you know. But Irish, what do you call it, you know, grub, that one. Their cooking was different from ours, you know. If you were staying there for, which I did, I was up there, you know, get up for breakfast. You used to get up, you know, you used to love the fry-ups, you know. Everything was full of grease, you know. I mean, when they fry bread, you know what I mean, it was frying in a pan of butter coat, you know, fat, you know. Well, when it came out like a Weetabix, you know, your bread was, you know. Your sausage, you know what I mean, was fried in a pan of butter fat, you know. Your bacon, look, you know what I mean, it was fried in a frying pan, you know. But the love greasy stuff, that one, you know. And apart from getting a greasy breakfast, the tea was stewed, because their tea used to be made in pots, you know. And the tea, teaspoons of tea used to put in a pot. Now, the water was poured in, the cold water was poured in the pot. And then the tea was poured on the top. And they used to put the lid on. And they used to put it on the gas stove. And they used to stew it up. Way, you know. He used to come out strong, you know. They talk about Newcastle Brown Ale. It was strong enough. But you can imagine, what I call it, a cup of tea, you know, strong tea, and greasy fry up, you know. You can imagine what your stomach's going to be like, you know. And, but it, anything in that lane, wherever you went today, you know, it was all stewed. The meals were stewed, you know, just that year, you know. So really, in a way, if I went there, I spent 7 days there, I'd love to be back home. I guess 7 days cooking, definitely, you know.
How did you, I mean, generally, I mean, I know you had an Irish girlfriend, did you get on well with the Irish civilians generally?
Yes. And no problem with them at all. Because I found out, on a Sunday, no matter what religion or all this, not you know, everybody spoke to each other in Ireland. I found that on a Sunday, you know, they're very sociable, you know, stop your speech, you say good morning to that one, you know. And the only difference I found out with the Irish people at the time, you know, was that they, in Belfast, this place is still there, Crumlin Road, off Crumlin Road, there was a street, I always remember, I never forget it, was Agnes Street. It was a Catholic street. The old Catholics lived in there. That big gates, it was like church gates, you know, keep people out, keep people in. The only people that got in was their own people. Now, I found out any of the lads that went ashore and were picking any of the lasses up that was at the dances and they lived in that street, had to be very, very careful. Some didn't, some knew, and some didn't. Some used to be tasting. And I can also remember, it was what I call it, there was three lads that was taken in, you know, taken into what I call it. The lads that took them into Agnes Street. It was like going to Oak Park with a gate, somebody that went, you know. They got them in, and the trouble started. And I can also remember, what do you call it? There was only one part of the ship's company, and the other two-thirds of the ship's company was away on leave. And it was us. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the ship that was, what do you call it, the base that was based in Pollardock, I don't know if it was called the Pembroke, I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure. Was it Pembroke or the Caroline? I don't know which.
Caroline.
Could be the Caroline. But anyway, we had to go with, what do you call it, the duty watch. Up that ship, and what I call part of our ship, duty watch, had to go out. We had to go in Agnes Street. We were taken by wagon into what I call it, in the Crumlin Road, to get them out. And we were told to use any force, whatever, to get them out. And we got them out.
Yeah. Was there much trouble?
Well,
I mean, you know, getting them out.
Well, we had to get through, we got through the gates, we had no problem. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we're geared up to get the gates, to force the gates open. We had no problem getting in, you know. The problem stood inside, you know, because we were hit with everything, you know. You used to throw everything, you know, bin lids and bins, Yeah. But our job was to get the lads out, the three lads out.
How badly beaten up were they?
They were bruised, but I wouldn't say a thing about, you know. It was just a case they were going to get them in then. Whether we're going to get them out or not, I don't know.
They'd sort of take them hostage?
I wouldn't say... No. You see, if you went out with an Irish girl, the first thing they used to ask you, I don't know what. If you want to make a date with them or take them home, the first thing they would ask you, what religion are you? You know? So if you were the opposite, it's going to be the end of it, you know. They were the same thing that with them. And, you know, and when they got in there, they said they were, of course, Catholics. And once they got in, and they changed their mind, and they've been said about, I don't know. But it could have been, because the Irish were very cute, especially the lasses. The first thing is to see you, what religion are you? Why, I don't know.
Now, what religion was your girlfriend?
Church of England. Church. Oh, she was Church of England.
Protestant, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And,
I know Brother Dean was Church of England, wasn't he?
Were you very aware of the trouble between the two communities?
Just in Upcombe Road, and that was in Agnes Street. That's the only trouble ever known. No other. There was no other trouble regards anything that one, you know, in any of the areas, you know. All I knew about what I call it, the Irish was that in a public dock, I found out majority of the workers that worked for Harland and Wolves were all Protestants. And there was very little Catholics. I thought there was a bit, you know, there was a big division there. Why, I don't know.
But there wasn't any overt fighting between the communities while you were there that you noticed?
Just not one at that particular street. You know what I mean? It was an area where I would say it was classed what you call a snow area. And if I'm not mistaken, it's still there. If I believe this day, I've been told it's still there. You know, Agnes Street. It's still got iron gates and everything up, you know. It's up Crumlin Road.